Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, I'm depressed alcoholic comedian James Nokise. A couple of years ago, I had a mental health breakdown which resulted in panic attacks on international flights, stepping in front of an oncoming bus, and eventually showering so long that I began to get a little bit hungry. And that's when I discovered something magnificent. Through the magic of takeaways and running water, it turns out my mental health safe space is eating fried chicken in the shower. And that's how we've ended up here, a mental health podcast on headspace and happiness. This episode, I'll be chatting to comedian Joe Damond. We'll be talking about being overseas.
Like, imagine, like, Maldives, Fijians and India and Malaysia. Like, that's crack up, eh?
Being a professional comedian.
I'm not going to compromise for anybody who I am, and if it means I miss out on shit, then so be it.
And being the one. Are you Neo?
Like, Neo from The Matrix or Neo Independent Woman?
Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure that you're in a safe space with your comfort food. And join us, eating fried chicken in the shower. Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower with me, James Nokise. Today, I am joined by Joe Damond.
I was going to wait. Sorry, Jimmy. Sorry,
bro. Comedian, and that's pretty much it. But
yeah, literally nothing else.
Over the place. All over the place doing comedy.
But not in a good way, like, all over the place, like when your mum hits you up, like, mate, you're all over the place.
That's what I am. Focus. Yeah. Focus. Sorry. You're doing, because we met in stand up. But you'd already been doing stuff in YouTube. You're very big on New Zealand social media. What else have you been doing?
It was funny. The first time we met, we were literally just talking about it. That dank... That might have been 2018?
I think so.
Still, my mum still has the poster. Because it was the first time she'd seen a poster with my name on it.
Aww.
Shut up, Mum. But yeah, that was 2018, 20, yeah. So a few years now. That was the first time we met. I still remember. I think you were headlining.
Oh, was I? It's just another day.
Just another day. That's just an open mic for Jimmy. But yeah, bro, it's crazy to sort of be here after. Because I remember I would see you around and just kind of be... like a little bit in awe, because I mean, as you and I both know, like, stand up's still pretty
these days. I mean, that's why
like 3 years ago.
That's why I remember you, bro. Come, my Pacific. You're not Samoan. That's okay. You are an honorary Samoan.
I am now if there's a gig.
Talofa.
About Judith.
But you were, we also, it turned out, came from down near the same place. I grew up in Wellington in Newtown, Lower Hutt, and you grew up.
Yeah, Lower Hutt, Wānui.
Wānui
Mata, in Lower Hutt. And I think that was the crazy thing when I first started stand up. I started seeing like how many like really good comedians, you know, were kind of from the. Hurricanes region?
Yeah,
right. Because Jermaine is from, like...
Jermaine Clements done down there, yeah.
Yeah, Corey.
That's why he's friends with Raybon Khan, Corey Gonzalez Ben Hurley, Steve Wrigley, Jan Marie.
Listen to all those names.
Di Henwood.
I forget Di Henwood.
Yeah, man, because his old man was, like, a Wellington theatre legend.
Really?
Yeah, Ray Henwood, man.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, which you don't necessarily put together.
Yeah,
so there's all those cats. And that's just some. That's just some of them, man.
There's a whole heap of them. Like, I think the reason that I put it down to is, like, people think Auckland's diverse. Mm. But Wellies is really diverse in the sense that Auckland still has, like, a lot of separation and sort of segregation amongst the communities. Yeah. Whereas Wellies, we're all on top of each other.
Totally. A friend of mine described it as Auckland is a collection of villages of different cultures.
Yeah.
So it presents as multicultural, but it's actually a collection of different cultures and villages.
Yeah.
Whereas Wellington, I think just because of population size, it's just all smashed together.
We're all together. And like, we all go to school with each other. There's no real, like, even, because in Auckland, you kind of have like the King's Colleges, the St. Kids, like all them. I went to probably the equivalent of those schools, and it was still pretty mixed.
Yeah? Like, which one were you at?
I went to Scots.
Oh, you were at Scots? Oh, right.
Yes, I was an SC boy.
But here's the thing about Scots that our listeners won't know, is that, Scots is flash, Presbyterian school.
Presbyterian, yeah.
Because my dad almost got me a scholarship in there, and then...
You're joking.
But then, like, they didn't teach Samoan, and apparently neither did my dad. So, so my mom and my stepmom were like, yo, you got to go to a school where they'll teach you some Samoan.
Oh, really? Yeah, because where did you go?
St. Bernard's. Which is the opposite of Scots.
Same Bernard's.
The dog pound.
I remember all my mates, because I went to intermediate in all my mates going to St. Bernard's and being gutted that I had to go to Scots.
Yeah.
But then, yeah.
But then you, like, got an education and were like...
Did really well. And
like, you're doing decently for someone who went to Scots.
This was the crazy... The hardest thing that... I mean, this is so... It's such, like, a first world problems thing to talk about. Mm. But, like, the hardest thing about Scots was... But you're surrounded by dudes that are like the best and just their different fields. Like, Stephen Adams was there. We've got a kid, Lewis Clairbert, who's about to go to the Olympics for swimming.
Yeah.
We like had just all types, and like any field that anybody was in, it wasn't like they just like kind of just played like rugby on the weekends. They were playing for like NZ schools and stuff like that. So it was a pretty high pressure, super competitive environment.
Where St. Bernard's had me.
And just you and the whole school. So it was
that. We had Alex Talia, who played for Manu Samoa in the 90s.
Yeah.
Had Isaac Luke, who played for the Warriors.
He went to St. Bernard's.
Went to St. Bernard's.
True.
And we had Aaron from New Zealand Young Entertainers.
Okay.
And
then a bunch of Queensgate workers.
A bunch of Queensgate workers, but really good Queensgate
workers.
Shout out
Queensgate.
Shout out to Queensgate. Also, Bunnings Lower Hutt represent.
I love St. Bernard's. So, like, I grew up overseas as well. So the environment at Scots wasn't different in the sense that, like, I think what I found hard wasn't so much, like, being different. But I think the pressure, especially being a brown dude in an environment like that, I think that was really, really difficult.
Mm.
Especially because, when you're at a place like Scots and you're brown, like, what do you think they're all looking at you as? This guy must carve at rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. First five.
And when you're walking around with that, knowing people think that of you, and the only sport you're good at is hockey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Brother, there's not a lot of places to hide. But yeah, it is. It was one of those things, and it was something that like my mum would talk to us about. That because you are like young and brown and going into these environments, a lot more is going to be expected of you.
Mm.
But I think it's just one of those things where you either kind of succumb to the pressure or you meet it.
Mm.
And I think I definitely met it, but it definitely made my high school experience really tough.
Mm.
But I enjoyed just pretending to everybody that like my parents were real rich because that was crack up. So when kids would make fun of me at the bus stop, I'd be like, your dad works for my dad, so I'm gonna tell him to get rid of your dad.
Which it's just you gotta meet ruthlessness with ruthlessness.
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's dog eat dog.
Yeah, I know it sounds harsh to some of our listeners, but trust me, like those high school Pacific Island high school confrontations. There's no retreat, no surrender.
That makes a man. That makes a man. It's dog eat dog, and I'll tell everyone my dad owns both dogs.
Speaking of eating, what chicken have you got?
See where they're
professional. What chicken have we got, my bro?
So I went with a bit of Korean barbecue.
Ooh, yeah.
There was no real particular reason. I would like to say it was in relation to my time growing up in Asia, but it actually isn't. Right, when we were living there, I was just eating Maccas and stuff.
This is good chicken, by the way.
I asked for the chicken, ate the chips first.
No, I'll try the chips. I'll try that.
Mmm,
it's good. Solid French fries. Right, solid.
This is good.
But you come for the chicken. Mmm,
this is really good.
Nice and sweet. I'm thinking about it though, like your because you're mixed race like me.
Mm.
And as a, is it Māori Fijian?
Mm.
Is that right? Yeah. So Māori Fijian Kiwi in Malaysia.
Yeah, bro.
That's quite the melting pot.
Wild,
eh? Yeah.
Yeah, so we lived in Malaysia for 2 years. India for another two.
Oh, wow.
3 maybe years. Something like that.
Parents work?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, my dad was working over there. And so the only reason we moved back was because my dad got real sick.
Right.
And he, because he still kind of has problems with his heart, but he had a massive heart attack over there.
Right.
And so yeah, after that, like, he got in a real bad state. And so I came back to New Zealand with my auntie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm probably, like, forgetting a lot, but pretty much how I remember it is I came back to New Zealand with my aunt while my dad was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved back as well, and then we just, like, never went back.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm actually writing about it at the moment, kind of just like our whole journey.
It's
like, imagine like Māori Fijians in India and Malaysia. Like, that's a cracker, but
absolutely, man.
Yeah.
It's like, was there much of a, like, forget Māori Fijian, just like New Zealand, like Pacific community there?
There randomly was a really good, like, community there of Kiwis.
Mm.
Weren't heaps, but the few that were there, I'm still really close to this day. And right. I consider them all, like, my uncles and aunties.
Right.
And so, yeah, they really supported us while my dad was sick, which was mean. But, yeah, other than that, but it's mostly, like, British Americans. Yes.
Just colonisers.
Just a typical colonisers. We're riding amongst them. Just doing our bit.
Yeah. Do they ever, like, look at you and just, like, can you just go get me? Like, oh, no, I live here.
Oh, no. I'd have to brush up on my British accent. Just because I'm like, oh, no, I'm one of you.
I'm one of you. You're in my house.
I'm here. I'm here culturally appropriating this.
Someone comes to
my place as well. So don't come to me.
Yeah, what's that like to be like? Because you're a kid. So are you aware of that kind of stuff?
I think this is actually something I talk about quite often.
Mm.
It became quite normal, like, the whole culture pretty quickly.
Mm.
What was then weird was coming back to New Zealand and seeing how different that was. Mm. In particular, yeah.
Do you have an accent? Like, when you came back?
Oh, bro, the worst. It was the worst accent. It was a British-American accent.
I mean, that's not that bad, actually.
But it was just, like, so confused.
Mm.
And so I would just get... The funny thing is, bro, and this is, like, 2007 or 2008. Mm. This is a classic. There's not, you know, there's obviously internet, like, takes 3 hours to load, so no one's really hanging out on that.
Yeah.
So everybody, when they see a dark kid with an accent that isn't New Zealand, immediately think African. You're African.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. It's intercontinental.
Is that weird to be like Tangata Whenua and mistaken for African?
Yeah, bro. Like, honestly, I shit you not, I probably didn't really start to consider myself. Like, it was this bad to a point where I remember I would sign, like, surveys or whatever, where I had to, like, you know, you do, like, your date of birth and gender and all that. And when it would ask what nationality I was, but I would put NZ European.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I was so, like, I didn't have... It's random, mate. It's random to think of, because I didn't have any association to my Māori or Fijian side. Because I would go to my Māori side and they'd be like, no, you're way too black, bro. African.
Mm.
Like, I still get it to this day. And, like, it's obviously just, it's all part of it. And then on my Fijian side, they'd be like, are you sure you're Fijian? Like, listen to how you talk. And, like, my cousins to this day still, every time they talk about me back in the day, they talk with, like, this really high... preppy, like, British accent. And then, so, like, the only place where I sort of felt like I fit in was, like, amongst white people.
Mm.
Because I guess we just bonded over the fact that none of us were brown. Not me thinking myself. I was like looking at them like, yeah, nah, none of us are brown there. We're like, yeah, so it was a weird, but it was a really weird identity crisis that I probably honestly had until I was maybe 18, 19, till quite old.
Which, if you're going back to it, if you're a brown kid at Scots and you're having that kind of identity crisis as well, that must have made things, I want to say, uncomfortable in your teenage years.
Yeah, it was. Like, I'd get asked to do. Like, I remember the big breakthrough for me was my mum forced me to go to Somes Island, which, for anybody listening, is a small island in the middle of Wellington Harbour. And she forced me to go learn Taiha with my brothers.
Right.
And that was, like, the first time I'd ever properly been immersed in my culture. And that was, year 13. So I was about 17, 18. And that was, like, the first time where I felt comfortable to, like, explore that side of me because... Because I was with all my cousins and stuff, I was just kind of accepted. Whereas before then, like going onto, onto a marae or being a part of a haka, I'd always like kind of get looks and stuff because they'd be like, who's this black kid?
Yeah. And I had the same thing, just on the opposite side of the spectrum. Who's this white kid?
I know exactly what you mean. I've had a massive identity crisis, I think, for a large like portion of my life in different ways. And when I was younger, it was my accent, and then it's been sort of like what culture I identify as, and I think at certain stages it was like how I looked. Like part of the reason I still, like people notice I always wear a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason for that is like when I was growing up, I had like really bushy, afro quite often.
Full of Vanaka Fijian
hair. Yeah, Vanaka Vakalubu.
Vanaka Vakalubu.
Brian, people just come up and just like grab my head or like just grab my hair and oh, it feels like a sheep, like all that kind of shit.
Oh my god!
I fucking like hated it.
Yeah,
hated it.
Yeah.
And so I got that heart out like when we came back, and so that's kind of why like I think I still have like a little bit of a thing with my hair. I keep it real short.
Did you
don't like showing it off?
I mean, you're not alone in this experience.
Yeah.
Like, which. Resonates with just people of colour across heaps of different cultures. And when you first heard Solange singing Don't Touch My Hair, that first bar comes out, you're just like...
Pretty much. Bro, this is the funniest thing that I think like a lot of people really like won't understand when it comes to, I think, just being a minority in general. I think they think that we all know that we all go through the same thing. But literally it's like...
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you first get acne.
Yeah.
And you're so embarrassed. Even though you can like see everybody else has it, you feel like it's something that only you're experiencing.
Totally.
So imagine like turning that into like the same instance when, you're experiencing things of racism. You're not thinking in your head, oh, I'm safe because I'm sure everybody else understands. You're thinking, holy fuck, I must be the only motherfucker here with skin like as black as mine that they're making fun of, with hair as bushy as mine that they're saying is like a sheep. Like that's what it really feels like.
And I think like what people don't understand about racism, who haven't necessarily gone through that particular kind of bigotry, is it strips your identity. And that's the attack that it does, is that it attacks your very core of your identity. And I think what people don't realize about being mixed race is that if you are then... I feel like mixed race people, this is a generalization, but it's a generalization based on interactions with other mixed race people. We get our more solidified sense of identity a bit later.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So when you're experiencing racism in like right in your mid 20s, like even to your 30s, and you haven't got a fully solid sense of identity.
Yeah.
And this might be true for other people as well. I'm just basing this on my own experience and what I've heard from other people. Like, what do you do to when in those moments when your own identity is in question to yourself and then someone's attacking it?
Well, this is literally something that has only come to me like in the last few months because it became more prominent as I got older, and especially now. It's funny that now, like, the progression around the acceptance of culture has almost had, like, an opposite effect in some ways, because now that people are learning about tikanga and stuff, people that are adopting it are almost using it as a measure of,
of how much, you know, how much do you know about your, about your culture? You know, how worthy of you of calling yourself a Māori?
Yeah,
like, bro, I was at this gig once. I was at this gig, and this, and I'm not going to assume, like, what culture she was, because then I'm, like, just as bad, but this chick was real white. And she, and she started speaking te reo to me, like, on stage, like, heckling. Because I just mentioned that I was Māori, and then she started, like, heckling in te reo, and then I was like, oh, sorry, I don't actually speak. I don't know a whole lot. And she kept going. And she could tell that I was, like, feeling embarrassed that I didn't really know. And she could tell that she, like, got me. And I was just kind of, like, standing there, like, well, what are you getting out of, like, doing this? And that was, like, a small instance of where I felt like, yeah, my authenticity is, like, being challenged because I, like, am not what you view, whatever in your head is authentic. And it's something that I've had throughout my whole life in different ways. So I think, it was like, what she was doing was actually so small, I think nobody else would have noticed. But I think for me, it, like, really brought back a lot of instances in my life where I felt that way. And so for me, what's really come to me now is, like, I think I owe it to, like, myself, and I owe it to anybody else that feels in the same position as me to be as true to myself as possible, which includes, you know, which includes how close I am to my cultures, because I didn't have the luxury of being as immersed in them as, you know, some other people were as I was growing up, because we were moving around and because my parents also, you know, made their own decisions. And so I owe it to myself to be that, because that's just what looking, that's just as much what looking like a Māori or looking like a Fijian in this day and age looks like as it is, you know, if I was to know everything about the culture and know every part of my language. So I think the reason, like, I feel personally responsible for being that is so that others in a similar position to me see that, no, we're allowed to claim our cultures just because it doesn't look exactly like how it's being told we have to look like. Who has the right to tell us that's not who we are? Because I've spent my whole life being told that that's not what I am. And so I'm claiming it now. And, like, regardless of whether I fit into what people see as being worthy of that, like, fucking doesn't... I don't give a fuck.
That's wisdom, man.
Yeah. So it's been a big journey, to be honest, bro, and I definitely still find it hard. Especially, like, just in basic scenarios, like, with... You know, like, but even something small, like, I'll be at, like, maybe a funeral or maybe a birthday, and someone will come up to me and be like, bro, you on for haka? Can you do tika tonu? And I'm like, fuck, I don't know the fucking words. Yeah, just like small things like that, it just kind of makes me like, fuck, you know, there's so much for me to learn. But the other thing I have to remind myself is, you know, I'm no less of a Māori because I don't know that. But I also have the responsibility to learn if that's something I want to do. But, yeah, it doesn't make me any less of who I am. So my mum and dad both work in IT.
Right.
And my mum in particular, like...
Are your mum and dad spies?
Well, they sound like it, eh?
They sound like
spies.
But
if you saw them, you'd be like... Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Do you say maybe, they don't look like spies, but that's exactly what spies
are. Maybe spy on the dinner table, but maybe spy on what's in the oven. Nah, joke. Sorry, mum and dad.
Shout out, mum.
You know,
dad.
I love you. Hey. You know, I love you. It's just a joke.
That's what I have to tell my dad every time.
Honestly, I'm going to get in trouble for that. But I was telling them how, like, for my mum in particular, like, she moved from Fiji, like, at a young age. And so for her, like, working in, like, in corporate IT, you know, in a world where they tell you have to wear suits and you have to speak a certain way and act a certain way, those environments very much strip you of, you know, like, your, like, they strip anybody of, like, their authentic self, let alone people that come from, you know, backgrounds like you and I, because the, like, what you and I get to experience as part of our cultures in those environments is deemed, like, unprofessional, and it's deemed, like, not, you know, not a part of, like, corporate culture.
Yeah.
And so it's like what I saw with mum was, like, she kind of had to strip every part of herself on that side of things in order to be accepted in that world. And she very much has. She's done super, super well for herself, but it's obviously come at a sacrifice of not actually being allowed to be closer to who she really is. And so it's kind of the catch-22 of, like, what a lot of our people have to experience is, like, if you want to... They're being told, if you want to make this step in this side of the world, if you want to take these opportunities, you're not allowed to be who you really are. So would you rather be who you really are and not be in there, or would you rather be in there and you have to remove that? And my parents chose to take that route, and it allowed us to do amazing things. We got to travel. We got to go to private school. And I know for me, if I had to make the same decision, I would make the same decision.
Have you found yourself in those positions, working in the arts?
100%, yeah. I think early days, I think arts, we're very lucky, and especially now that the difference is becoming not only accepted but celebrated. But I think still there's still a long way to go in that the glamorous parts of, like, our cultures is what's accepted, not the whole thing. And so for me, I'm trying to be part of the next wave and the movement that allows our cultures in our entirety to be accepted. Because, yeah, the parts that get funding are very much like, they're the ones that everyone loves. But when you get to the less showcased and the darker sides of it, those are still very much like, you're not allowed to talk about those, not allowed to do those. So yeah, it's still very much like a back and forth, but I watched my mum in particular have to go through that. And I think for me, I just made a conscious effort of, I'm not going to compromise for anybody who I am. And if it means I miss out on shit, then so be it.
I think bitterness is a great enemy.
Yeah.
Like, psychologically, for anyone. Whether they're in the arts. And it sounds like you're saying a lot of bitterness that comes in. Have you found a way on a personal level? Like, are you just walking around carrying it? Or have you found ways to disperse it or address it?
I hate saying that I do carry it, but yeah, I think I really do. Like, I've always, and it's been something, I've been like it since I was a kid, bro. Always a real bad grudge holder. Always just like, bro, I just remember everything. Like, and whilst that helps me because I can remember everything, but it hurts me because I remember everything. Yeah. And so, I think still very much figuring out how to deal with it, but I think just being open with it has definitely been a start for me, and like not being ashamed. Because for a long time, I was ashamed that I was that way, because I was like, man, just let it go. And I just was getting more frustrated at myself because I couldn't let things go. But I'm being open, yeah. But these days, just being open about it.
Yeah.
And trying not to, be hard on myself for just feeling the way I'm feeling.
Yeah.
But I think, what you're saying is absolutely something I'm trying to do, just, like, keeping perspective. Reminding myself, like, what's important in my life. Bro, for 4 years, I didn't give a fuck about my personal life. I was just solely focused on comedy and trying to make a career for myself. And then I've got to a point where, like, in a sense, it's a career. Like, I make, money from it to live on and stuff. And it just didn't make me happy at all. It didn't have any of the effects that I ever thought, ever dreamed of it having. So I think now, because I've gone through that experience, knowing that things that I actively wanted didn't make me happy, now I'm like, okay, what's really important in my life is it's my friends, it's my family. And because I've always been hopeless at, like, reaching out to friends and stuff and actively, like, trying to do that and really focusing on, like, my personal relationships, a lot of that's really been helping. For 4 years, I just did not give a fuck about anything else. And, it helped me, I guess, because it kept me focused and it kept me hungry. But I definitely feel like, for 4 years, I just didn't progress as a person. So I'm like, I'm doing a lot of things now that, then, 25, I'm sure people are learning when they're like in their, late teens, early 20s, but...
Bro, I didn't learn that until 30-something.
Yeah.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Got a shower? Got some chicken? Take the next step.
Joe Damon, you are a social media star of New Zealand. I think that's fair to say. You sold out Sky City two nights in a row, based entirely off your social media presence.
Mm.
What's it like being a social media star in New Zealand? How does that affect your mental health?
It's great over here. Do you remember when we caught up before I went and did that? Do you remember?
Yeah, we went that's right, we got a coffee on K Road.
Yeah. That was really nice, bro. I still really appreciate that. Thank you.
No, bro, it was really fun to see. You were buzzing so much.
I think I was just like, because I'd been kind of finding it hard to like find anyone to talk to about like how even do the show. Because bro, honestly, I was just like, I'm fucked. Like, why am I doing this? And then when we talked about it, and you were literally just telling me, bro, just do it. Like, go hard. It was simple but very effective.
Yeah, I'm a great coach, mate. That's what
you really are, bro. It was exactly what I needed.
The game is simple. Just play the game.
When I say Jim said go hard, Jimmy quite literally just said go hard. He's like, go do it. And I was like,
I believed in your talent, mate.
Done.
I believed in your talent. And it popped by like massive success.
Yeah, bro, it was crazy. I think in regards to like being a It is really crazy, especially like the part that social media plays in New Zealand as well. Mm. Like, I mean, obviously it's the same in every other country, like sort of how big it is, but for such a small place like New Zealand, right, once you kind of get the feeling that once something pops off, like somewhere in New Zealand, like kind of people start to hear about it everywhere else.
Yeah.
So it's really funny like that. I think you sort of look at other like countries, you can imagine like things stay in their niche.
Mm.
You can still be very successful in your niche.
Mm.
But in New Zealand, it's very much like it goes from a niche, then mainstream. Like there's no real like middle ground.
Yeah. Once you get a certain amount of followers, you actually have a small New Zealand town following.
It's really funny like that. It's really funny like that. So yeah, bro, it's crazy. I think for me, like when I first started in 2017, I like actively made it part of my plan to, because what I saw when I started in 2017 was like, and I still remember people would talk about it when I would go do like the Raw nights on Mondays. And people would talk about how like, you know, Jimmy Jackson and Johnny Tuivasa, they'd talk about all these guys and they would talk a lot about how Jimmy would like go on tour and stuff.
Mm.
But he wasn't a stand-up comedian, he was a social media comedian. And so through seeing kind of those pathways and then seeing the New Zealand comedians, because, and this is like no disrespect to like any of the New Zealand, like any of like our peers, but I'll kind of see like what Jimmy had done in selling these huge theatres, and then I'd see like some of my close mates who like I considered some of the best stand-ups around.
Yeah, you can look at me when you say that. You can look at me when you say that.
I was literally just about to say this doesn't include you, but like in this context that you're about to hear,
absolutely.
But like, I'd see like some of our mates who were like amazing, and bro, like they'd put on shows, no one would turn up.
Yeah, right.
And so
that doesn't include me.
Yes. No, I got you, bro. I got you. It's not like gyms where five people turn up.
Yeah,
bro. But that was the thing is like I would see that. I think like what really hit me was like, and this was back in 2017 when Lovegrove was like, he was still on. And so for me, I would watch Lovegrove and be like, this guy is one of the best comedians I've ever seen.
Mm.
And he's performing to five people at Revelry on a Wednesday.
Mm.
And so for me, in my head, I was just like, okay, I want to develop myself on the same pathway that all these great stand-up comedians are doing. Mm. But I want to also take advantage of like the audiences that the social media people are really building. So I spent like
It was about 2 years. I gave myself 2 years to be like, okay, I'm not going to worry about social media in particular. Mm. I'll just focus on the stand-up. And then after I came back from Melbourne Comedy Festival and I saw the scale of like what everyone was doing there, Laura included, I was just like, okay, now's the time that I really start. And then, yeah, started to build my following and stuff. And then that was like start of 2019. And then around, it was about a year later that it really started to pop off. Because I've been running like companies on social media since I was 15.
Right.
Yeah, so like I grew up.
Is that a Scots College thing?
Is that random move? That's random move, bro. Shout out Scots. But
is that because your parents are both in IT and so?
Yeah, bro. So I always grew up around computers. Like,
right.
My dad made me get my Microsoft certification when I was like 9. Had me watching all these videos and shit. So like,
oh, for real?
I learned how to touch type when I was like 7.
Are you Neo?
But Neo from the Matrix or Neo Independent Woman?
Maybe you, I feel like you could be the love child of both.
I'll be going backwards going, missing the pins.
This is exactly the song I have.
Dodging bullets going.
I would absolutely watch. I would absolutely watch a remake of the Matrix with the singer Neo
playing Neo.
I know Kung Fu, but I also know how to dance.
just stomping the bullets and then going.
So you have mad computer skills.
Yeah, that's something like that people probably don't know about me. But.
Yeah. Is it strange being in a professional space that is primarily used socially? Like, most people, they go on TikTok or they go on Twitter. Like, they go on Twitter, maybe catch their news, go on TikTok to just be entertained.
Yeah.
But you're going into that space thinking, all right, work.
Yeah. It is really funny. And I think, like, a lot of people probably get a little bit taken aback. Especially when... Because I'm really open about, like, kind of how I use it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always been pretty open in that. One of my big plans to break into TV on New Zealand was always going to be through social media. And so I think people at times can kind of feel a little bit jaded by that because they're just kind of like, oh, you sort of just use this as sort of a step up. But for me, how I see social media is because I use it every single day, it's just sort of an extension of like who I am. And people will say you should never treat social media that way, but like it's that prominent in my life that like I just had to. And so, but in saying that, I just use it, you know, when it's required, and I don't use it when it's not. And so people will see like online, I can post every day for like a week if I'm feeling like it, and I can not post something for like 2 months.
Yeah, right.
Because it's a part of me. I just kind of do it as I feel like. I don't feel any obligation to do or say anything on there.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. We can't tell you which chicken to choose. We can only show you the way.
How are you with sadness?
Damn, that's a good question. I'm trying to think about what the last thing I was sad about was. What was the last thing you were sad about?
To be honest, bro, I have depression, so I just wake up.
Yeah.
I wake up and I'm in the wrong country to my wife. So
yeah.
That's what I get sad about in the morning.
That's a good enough one.
It's a good enough one. It's probably, she listens to this, so it's probably the correct one as well.
Yeah. Shout out, Laura. I love you, mate. But I think, I have never been clinically diagnosed, but it's something I've always been aware of myself that I'm probably, go through as well. I think how I am with sadness, it's funny, it kind of is an ongoing thing of like what I've been talking about. I think where I like would bury myself when it came to when I was feeling like that was into what I was trying to do, was into work. I remember the worst, like probably one of the worst emotional positions I've been in my life was maybe like 2019, end of 2019. And that was the year I was just doing Quiznos. Mm. And I was like, I'm not fucking doing anything in my life. Mm. Like, what am I doing? You know, going through all the motions of what you go through when you're feeling that way. And I was actually about to give stand-up up completely and just go try to find a real job. Yeah, I was going to give up all four of my Quiznos. Mm.
The empire was crumbling.
I was going to cash in the millions. how I dealt with it back then was just kind of, thought about my goals, thought about my career. And I remember that in that particular moment, I just volunteered on a bunch of like short films and regaining like my love for, because film and television is where I've always wanted to be. Mm. So I think in regaining my love for that and finding my passion again, that's what broke me through. But now what I'm trying to evolve to is looking beyond just career and stuff like that, because as I was saying before, you can keep like looking to the next thing and the next thing if that's what's going to make you happy, but it's just a cycle that's never going to end. And so now it's just finding the things that like really, really make me happy. I think most recently the thing that really helped me when I was feeling really down was just went back to Wellington, visited my sister and my brother-in-law and my nephew, and they're really good with me. Like they know I'm usually having a tough time when I come home, but they know that they're like the big solution as well for me. Like my sister Grace has been massive in that for me. So I guess that's kind of how I deal with it at the moment, but it very much, I do know of myself that what was career now and what is family now, it's still very much me kind of going to things to sort of like band-aid it up and forget a little bit, and then in some ways try to pick myself up and keep going. What I'm still really bad at is addressing why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling and really getting to the bottom of it.
I ask this of everyone who comes in here, bro. Is there anything that you would like to share in the shower before you go?
Soap.
Soap?
Yeah.
I loved
it. Nah.
Okay. Look what we have, right?
What do people usually say?
There's no wrong answer. It's literally, like, you can say nothing as well. Like, right. It's literally, this is my safe space, weirdly enough. Chicken and a shower. And so I always ask people if there's anything while they're in my space that they'd like to share.
I feel like I've shared a lot that I don't usually talk about, which has been nice. But no, I guess the big thing for me, but actually, you know what? I will say this, and this came up, and I just thought about this after thinking about your question before about, like, you know, representation in the industry and stuff. I think I look at the impact that you kind of had on me unknowingly. I remember the first time I think I met you, and I think I said something to you about like, oh, bro, like, I've been looking up to you for so long. It's, like, so good to finally meet you. And I remember being starstruck. And so I think for me, it's just as a... Even though for you, it's probably just, like, being... You were just doing your thing. Mm. I think your presence and you representing kind of a lot of how I viewed myself, you representing that in the industry, played such a massive part on me... Especially as somebody who's been learning and figuring out their identity in amongst my career, you know, as I talked about before. So just more as like a massive thank you for playing that part. It's not something that I think it's something that I always kind of offhandedly reference whenever we talk, but I've never actually acknowledged it to you directly. And so it's just as a massive thank you for that. And nothing on top of that, I know for me, I hope to have the same impact on like the next generation, because bro, I think I played it off a little bit smaller before, but it really did mean a lot when I would like see you on YouTube.
Mm.
And I was just like, yeah, okay. There is an Islander that has made it in this.
Yeah.
I can do it as well.
But like, one, you never have to say thank you to me for that, bro. That's you know, because to me that's organic.
Mm.
In that, when really we're gonna have the flushing of the toilets while I'm trying to make an emotional point. Yeah, that's the comedy guys going, stop talking shit. Yeah, stop talking shit.
So shut the fuck up.
But you know, when art's coming up, people like Oscar and the Nakeds, if they saw me at an industry party, they come say hi.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, they tease me, but they come say hi.
Oh, man.
You know?
And it leaves a lot on you.
Yeah. And like, Tofinga always kept mami, even Ete, you know, had some kind words. Irene Pink.
Yeah.
You know? And so any big comedian, well, like, it's funny that those are big Pacific Island comedy names. Velimanaseta.
Yeah.
It's that thing of whenever I've seen a younger, not necessarily a less inexperienced or anywhere, I've seen a younger Pacific comedian. Mm. I've just tried to treat them the same way that the Pacific Islanders before me treated me in this industry.
But it always leaves a big impression. It always leaves, even just the simplest things of, even just the most simple thing of like saying hello, acknowledging, because it's like, here's somebody that I'm looking at as a representation of who I want to be, and they see me.
All I ask is when you get the BAFTA, just remember that. Just be on stage, BBC, and just be like, and James Nokisa, because
shout out Jimmy.
told me everything I know.
So big shout out to Jimmy. But bro. I know I've always like kind of said it offhandedly, but I think that was actually the first. I actually wanted to say that at the start was that was a. It was about time I said it like directly to you. Yeah. So I appreciate it, brother.
No, I appreciate it, man. Yeah. I appreciate you coming today and
of course, man.
Talking shit as to be on your podcast.
Yeah.
Is that still going?
Nah, I haven't recorded for ages, bro, but I actually the plan was to actually go back to doing it.
Oh well, I'll come return the favour sometime.
Fuck, I'll hold you to that, brother.
Greasily shaking.
Yeah, that's me.
Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower is produced for RNZ by Charlie Blickley of Fruit and Nut Productions. The engineer is Ronnie Poet. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkins. You can find this podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for The Chicken. If you're rating podcasts and you want to rate ours, give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your comfort food and your mental health safe space with me, then you can tweet me on @JamesNorkisa. If you're experiencing mental health issues and you're in New Zealand, you can text 1737 or go to the RNZ Fried Chicken page and we'll have a list of different mental health practitioners that might be able to assist you. If because of the pandemic you're experiencing COVID-related mental health issues, you can go to www.health.govt.nz. Look for the COVID page and you'll be able to find mental health resources there. Stay safe. Whakatai lava. Matua.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.